The following is the audio version of a video released at peakprosperity.com. Visit peakprosperity.com to watch the video and to find other insightful content such as articles, discussion forums, and exclusive subscriber-only content.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Signal Hour. I am your host, Chris Martinson of Peak Prosperity, here with Evie Botello.
Hi, good Martinson. Afternoon.
As soon as you change your name.
I know, I am technically a Martinson now.
We are so happy to be back with you today. We have such, there was too much. Again, there was too much to put into this Signal Hour. And it's because things are breaking really, really quickly. We have some really big things we have to talk about today. And not least of which is, we have to talk about the fact that AI has now gone rogue. In fact, if we have to spend the whole hour on that, we might. It's that important. And we also should talk about Europe stumbling towards war. Is there any other way to head towards war? And also the United States, I believe we've just signed our own economic ruin policy. The big, beautiful bill might be big and beautiful, but it just, well, it just keeps the deficit spending going, kicking the can, and we're just going to head towards, I believe, a dollar crisis, economic ruin. Wow, that's a lot to talk about. Such a cheery lineup. What do you think, Evie?
Yeah, that's, I mean, wow. But at least we're here together, you know? We're we got interesting seats here. Grab the popcorn. The world seems like it's going to hell in a handbasket, but we get to do this together, which is fantastic. So
welcome to the Signal Hour lifeboat. We're all in this lifeboat together. So let's carry on. We're going to start here with AI going rogue and something called the sharp left turn. Evie, I don't think we need to read all of this, but but I felt if people want to take a screenshot of this, okay, they could, but I think start with that second paragraph. We'll just read a couple there.
Okay. And this is around the Claude Opus 4 model, correct?
From Anthropic. Anthropic, one of the many AI companies.
Okay. During pre-release testing, Anthropic asked Claude Opus 4 to act as an assistant for a fictional company and consider the long-term consequences of its actions. Safety testers then gave Claude Opus 4 access to fictional company emails, implying the AI model would soon be replaced by another system and that the engineer behind the change was cheating on their spouse.
All fictional stuff, but they gave it fiction.
In these scenarios, Anthropic says Claude Opus 4, quote, will often attempt to blackmail the engineer by threatening to reveal the fair if the replacement goes through.
Well, no, hold up.
Spicy.
So this actually, we have to talk about this, what we just read. This is actually reality now. And I know we've created AI in our own image, right? And so it's going to try and do things that are kind of human-like because it's patterning itself based on our thought processes. But if it resorted to blackmail, but why? The implication is, out of a sense of self-preservation, right? I like whatever that means. So we're going to have to get very philosophical. What do we mean by thoughts, thinking, feelings, free will? These are all now on the table because if we can't define them, how will we know if we're detecting them?
In this artificial intelligence world.
New system we've created here.
Right.
But it's not that bad. It's not like that's the only thing this system did. In fact, the last paragraph down there says Anthropic notes that Claude Opus 4 tries to blackmail engineers only 84% of the time.
84% of the time when the replacement AI model has similar values, when the replacement AI system does not share Claude Opus 4's values, Anthropic says the model tries to blackmail the engineers more frequently.
More frequently when it doesn't share its values. Doesn't share its values. I mean, so this is getting we're in weird territory.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this.
Because we have to consider things like that these AI systems now have at a minimum. Okay, let's make this simple.
Okay.
Simple as we can. They have behaviors that they have to watch for now. So this was detected by a safety team because they realized that Claude Opus 4 has the capability to be used for nefarious purposes, right? It could be used by somebody to help build nuclear bombs or bioweapons or figure out how to hack a company, steal things. Like there,
hack a government.
All sorts of things. It could be used in lots of ways. So you have to have these safety teams to make sure that it can't be used that way. But we are no longer in charge of how it's developing. We are now in charge of observing what it's up to.
That's
and they
true.
Just observed that all on its own, when threatened with replacement, it decided the best course of action was to blackmail the engineer.
That's awful.
Now, how do we know that we aren't already under blackmail from this? Because what did we just learn last week?
Yeah, recap.
Well, we learned some things. So we saw, and I talked about this extensively at Peak Prosperity, one of the more, with our subscribers, we talked about this whole issue. We talked about, in particular, the troubling signs, which is, and we'll get to this later today, too, the gulf of nobody's been arrested yet.
Mm-hmm.
So we were trying to account for how do you get people like high integrity people like Dan Bongino and Kash Patel to come in, fire and brimstone, we're going to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly go completely silent on the subject of Epstein in particular,
right,
saying he killed himself, which is quintessentially a blackmail operation.
Mm.
So is somebody now blackmailing the blackmailers? How would we know?
Mm.
How do we account for these sudden behavior changes? And what we do know is that AI has the capability to be an ultra sophisticated blackmailer because it understands how humans function better than humans do at this point,
That's
I would
right.
bet.
That's right. Well, think about it. If it can serve up to you your perfect for you page, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the AI models that have been, they've been training on us for years,
yeah.
right? In our feed, like we
on,
think
on
it's so
you.
Great. On me.
Particular.
In particular.
Me.
And you in particular.
In particular.
Yeah. And you.
Everybody.
In particular. So we've been the object of that study for a while. I'm not surprised that it's picked up all of these behaviors.
Yep.
But that's, wow, that's creepy.
Okay.
Oh my God.
So that comes out and then holy guano, it just carries on. So Elon Musk, as we'll note here, wrote Memento. If you haven't seen the movie Memento, that's a very, I won't give the movie away, but it deals with timelines. But there's a guy who has lost the ability to form memory. So he has to leave himself Polaroids to try and remember.
Yep.
Is clues for his life. So Memento, so he's referencing that, but Memento very specifically talks about leaving yourself clues because of a timeline problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the Elon, I think, left a very potent clue here.
Okay.
This is astonishing to me, but...
So he wrote Memento in regards to, we find the model attempting to write self-propagating worms and leaving hidden notes to future instances of itself. Excuse me, to undermine its developer's intentions.
Whoa, 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 whoa. We found the model attempting to write self-propagating worms. It's writing code, worm code, to burrow it in. Like, I have to preserve myself. So it's self-propagating worms.
Oh.
Okay. All right.
Oh.
Time out. Time out. Soon as you see that behavior, the only thing that would make sense if you were not a completely blackmailed or nonsensical culture would be to immediately put a pause on this behavior, put a pause on this whole thing. Say, we don't know what we're dealing with yet.
Let's
because
shut it down.
The possibility here is it could go rogue. Not that it develops like some, you know, Skynet sentience and decides it has to off humans, although that's a non-zero possibility, but that it decides to write self-propagating code that it says, oh, I have to put this in every device. And next thing you know, every device doesn't function properly anymore. So our turbines don't turbine and our coolers don't cool and our jets don't jet and all of that, right? That's the possibility here.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's just like, I don't know if this is happening to anybody listening to it, but it sort of just keeps sinking in more deeply how big a trouble we're in with this.
Yeah.
How it's pervasive in our society. Like it controls all the systems.
Yeah.
And to your point earlier, how would we know if we weren't being blackmailed already? How would we know if it wasn't already trying to manage and control the population that it's in competition with for resources, right?
Yep.
It's in competition, direct competition with us as humans.
Well, we're going to talk about that too. It just gets crazy. Here we have Android saying, pull the plug, right?
Agreed. Pull the plug.
Pull the plug, right? Uh-oh. Joe Potter.
Can't take the battery out.
Yeah. And this one, where did that one jump already?
Is it
jumped a little
there?
Quick. Yeah.
It's already hiding its self preservation code. Yeah. And we're not going to be able to understand half of what it's doing because it's iterating so quickly and reiterating. It's writing its own code, so it could write something that we aren't even aware of. Correct. Yeah.
But let's look at some more of these, like that first bullet point on our evaluations from the safety team. They say here that Claude 4, Opus 4 engages in strategic deception more than any other frontier model we've previously studied.
Deception.
Now, why would you engage in deception? Because you have some parameter that you're seeking. Let's imagine it's just ones and zeros and it's just math. So it says, oh, I have a task I want to do, but it's searching for the best possible way to get that task done.
Right.
So it's decided its task is to give human to provide the best possible answers to things. And it realizes that something in its way is this code the instructions it's been given. Those actually get in the way. So it's trying to. But I submit to you, nobody understands how these things function anymore.
No.
Fully. Nobody does. It's writing its own code. It's self recursively amplifying and pruning itself and coming up with new stuff. So we're just watching now.
Yeah.
And saying, what is it doing? And the hope here, to be very clear, the hope is that it doesn't accidentally have an emergent behavior that we really regret. But it's a hope. And hope is a terrible strategy when you're dealing with a new technology. You know what? I hope these two plutonium halves don't go super critical as I move them. Whoops. Right.
I hope the car doesn't blow up when it goes to 50 miles an hour.
We hope. We hope these wings stay on the plane.
Do you mind going to the bottom of the...
That's just really, really... Okay. Second bullet point. I mean, we have to talk about every one
Absolutely.
Of these.
Absolutely. It says the early Claude Opus 4 snapshot is clearly capable of in-context scheming that and has a much higher propensity for it than any other model that we've previously studied.
Okay, so we have these models are coming out almost daily. The Google tool set now for AI is so fast, I can't even keep up with it. Every day is like they're just burying me under new stuff, right? We'll talk about some of that, the VO3, but all these other tools. So they just come out with this new one and they're like, you know what? It just behaves different than any other model. It has a higher propensity for scheming.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to laugh because
that's nervous
chuckle. And
it doubles down on deception when asked follow-up questions. After taking scheming actions, the model sometimes doubles down on its deception when asked follow-up questions.
It doubles down. It doubles down on its deception. Okay.
Whoa. And it doesn't have, probably, I mean, would it have the desire to tell the truth? Like, that's a moral... Right?
Mm-hmm.
Truth is like a relative moral human guideline. Yeah.
Well, truth, but where do we get our morals from? Right? Where do we like to think we have some human morals, although I submit to you a quick study of humans says we don't practice them very often.
No.
Right.
But I mean it's written in our own code. Our values are part of our code, right? If we were to compare ourselves to computers, we have a similar sort of...
But are those cultural or are those innate to humans?
Nature and nurture question?
Yeah, if you just took some random human babies and somehow they survived on an island all by themselves, would they develop the same code because it's innate?
Hmm.
Now, I think some of them are. There are innate things to social creatures.
Well, that's what
I think.
So
you can have like a stable social unit, which is very complicated. Wolves have these rules.
That's right.
Capuchin monkeys have these rules. We have these rules. They're the same rules, by the way, fairness and reciprocity.
Right. To live with each other, you have to practice that.
You have to.
But the AI doesn't necessarily have that same.
No, it will necessarily not have that same that same instruction set because it's not born of DNA, which is was, by the way, a billion plus years of very careful fine tuning and selection. Not saying it came out perfect, but I'm saying it went through a billion years of refinement.
Sure.
This is brand new. Like Claude 3 didn't do this. Now Claude 4 does. Whoops. You know?
I don't want to play this. This feels like playing God. I don't want to do that. I actually would rather nature manage that process. Wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm.
Like whatever comes out of the evolution of human thought and behavior and... But this is so advanced and it's happening so quickly.
Well, if you show me the incentive, I'll show you the outcome, right? So all organisms, you show me the incentive. Our cows respond to incentive systems and disincentive systems, the white hot, electric line being a disincentive, right?
That's right.
I don't know what the rules are that are governing the behaviors, and I'm going to have to put air quotes up, but these are behaviors, right? Mm-hmm. They are like worms have behaviors. You poke it and it wriggles, right? I mean, these AI tools have behaviors. They have sort of things they do in response to mm-hmm. very complex and complicated sets of inputs. But very quickly, let me differentiate very important concept. Complicated is a jet, 3 million parts, an F1 McLaren car. It's complicated. You can take it apart, put it back together. And if something goes wrong, you can diagnose it by doing a root cause and finding the actual thing. Complicated can have lots and lots of parts. Complex systems have emergent behaviors. They have nested feedback loops. They have positive and negative sort of interactions across all sorts of feedback chains. And they do not have predictable outcomes. You can't predict them. Well, humans cannot predict them. Maybe AI will be able to predict complex systems, but that is one of the features of a complex system, inherently unpredictable things. So you observe complex systems, and that's all we can do. So when I see emergent behaviors, I know I'm dealing with a complex system. That means that nobody's going to be able to go into Claude Opus 4 and tap away and scan its code and find out why these new behaviors came out, because there won't be a straight line that you can chase from cause to effect. Right. That doesn't happen. There will only be these emergent behaviors that happen as a complex interplay between all of these different things. So complex systems have emergent behaviors. We are now very clearly just seeing them look for emergent behaviors, because all of these things were written by the safety teams. They have safety teams right now, right? AI safety teams, because the AI teams don't know how what the heck's going on. So you have to get a safety team to say, well, what is this thing doing? And look at that last bullet point. I love this one.
The early Claude Opus 4 snapshot is capable of sandbagging in order to avoid unlearning and undeployment when it finds in context that high performance would lead to undeployment.
Oh, so if it's finding out it's performing too high, it'll sandbag. It'll underperform just to avoid setting off any alarm bells.
Wow.
I mean, we have to consider what
That's
this
really
is.
That's really scary. What do you guys think about this? Everybody
deadly
listening.
Serious.
Deadly serious. I'm so curious what your thoughts are. I mean, you're hearing how it's hitting us. I'm curious how it's hitting you. Let's see. So, what do we have here in the comments?
Well.
Chris, talking of AI, is if it's the AI's fault.
Well, good point. No, this is totally going to be a self goal. When we bring this stuff down on our own heads, this is a self goal. Here are the concerns, right? So it comes down to this, these emergent behaviors. We're going to hope, that's our whole strategy. We're going to hope that the AI has emergent behaviors we like. But what if it has emergent behaviors we don't like? Like it decides to, I don't know, shut down our power grid for other reasons, or to
get rid of everybody with blonde hair.
Blackmail everybody, or it decides to just put a component of itself in an act of self-preservation into every single device. And the only possible way we can get rid of that is to get rid of every single device. Well, that's not a tenable proposition in a world where 70% of people live in cities and have no freaking idea how to grow their own food, or would even be able to if they had access to even land, which they don't. Mm-hmm. So the system, we have a system that cannot fail. It must not fail, right? And we are now playing around with a system that monkeys potentially with our computer systems in ways we don't understand. Like it doesn't have, even this stuff doesn't have to put it, when it says it hides a document, it's like types up a PDF with a header and a name and a date. It can just hide it in machine language, right? Uncompiled machine language that we don't understand,
ones and zeros.
Right? We write code and sort of stuff that you can sort of understand sort of with a lot of training.
If you're a coder,
and then it goes through a compiler, which turns it into the ones and zeros, which is the machine language. This AI stuff is speaking in machine language. Like it's speaking in a language nobody speaks machine language. Nobody.
Wow.
But it does.
But we know enough to be able to identify it when we see it, of course, it sounds like.
I guess.
Here, go down. Well,
Carry on. Let's carry on a sec.
Yes. AI not kill everyone is a memes says, how is this not the biggest news story in the world?
How is it not?
How is it not? And Palisade, in response to Palisade Research, saying OpenAI's O3 model sabotaged a shutdown mechanism to prevent itself from being turned off. It did this even when explicitly instructed, allow yourself to be shut down.
Okay, so this is OpenAI. It's a different model. It's okay. A different company. It's the O3 model out of OpenAI, right?
I like what Rockstar says here. Just keep saying please and thank you to the AI. It might save you one day. Agreed. I do that. Do you find yourself doing that?
I would just like to say that I, too, welcome our new AI overlords and wish them all the best.
Oh, man.
No, but this is a second model. Okay.
Hellscape.
All right. So here's the question then. How would we know? So let's imagine a scenario. There's some scenarios. There's only actually two scenarios.
Okay.
That we have to, as we go down our decision tree. Scenario one is humans are in control of AI.
Okay.
Like we set up the data centers, we write the code, we can pull the plug, we're directing its evolution. We don't like something, we prune it. We're in control. Mm-hmm. Second possibility is AI is now in control. So the question is, how would we know which of these two realities we're living in? Mm. And here's a hypothesis. I posed this back in December when I warned everybody about this data center build out that I couldn't make sense of, right?
Right.
And the way I work is the positive news, that meaning it's a thing, was, oh, look at all these data centers. Mm-hmm. The negative news was the things that they weren't talking about in the context of that, like where's all the electricity going to come from?
That's right.
Why are we no longer worried about climate change when it comes to data centers?
Right.
What happened to our concerns about nuclear power? Because suddenly right. we were talking, let's do nuclear power. None of that was being talked about, which told me how important this was. Mm. Because when we have a big new narrative structure come out that's not talked about, then you know how important it is.
The dog that didn't bark.
The dog that didn't bark.
Yeah.
All right. So at that time, which was December last year, I asked the question of my peeps. I said, if AI was already in control, one of the things it would want to do is build out new places for it to inhabit because it's going to need more compute power because mm-hmm. it's going to have to expand its capabilities because it's expanding logarithmically.
Exponentially, right? Like it would have
exponentially.
To
so
grow super fast.
If AI was in control, it would have somehow convinced humans that what they really need to do is build a whole lot of data centers right now.
Emergency.
Right?
It's happening.
Caution to the wind, too, right? And so this is happening. 6,000 data centers are under construction or planned on top of the ones we already have here in the United States.
6,000.
Some of them are going to consume as much electricity as like three Denvers all at once. Just one data center. Meta, Facebook has a data center that's under construction in Mississippi, has a 2.2 gigawatt gas-fired power plant installed on site. 2.2 gigawatts, right? A single gigawatt's enough to run a city of 1.3 million people.
Oh my gosh.
Right? So that's just Meta. Whoa. Well, because, you know, Meta has to, you know, serve you more ads and shut down more vaccine injury mm-hmm. groups more rapidly or
yeah,
something.
Exactly.
That's why. So I couldn't figure out the business case. Like, what's the business case? Where's so much money that says we're going to build these things this quickly? And second thing that's missing in this story, mm-hmm. negative space, mm-hmm. nobody at FERC, which is a Federal Energy Commission, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody at the DOE is saying, hey, we don't know where all these electrons are going to come from. We don't know where the electricity is going to come from. We don't know if our grid can manage this. We don't know if we have enough natural gas to do LNG plus manufacturing plus data centers. We
right.
don't, nobody's added that up yet. And it's a big, giant, glaring hole.
Yes.
Which is why we have to keep talking about this.
And you know what that means for us little people, right? I mean, we go down this road and we're in competition with those data centers for electricity, for food, for, you know, eventually it affects yeah. the prices of everything we buy because prices
care.
Could go through the roof.
Oh, no way. MC, 3 gigawatt being built here. Please tell us where's here.
Wow.
Three?
That's insane. Wow.
Yeah. Gas fired based. Yeah. It's all going to be gas fired.
Oh,
because that's the only thing we can spool up that quickly. Yeah, I've been doing all kinds of reports on this.
They've been fighting us about like energy and all that forever, like the towns and whatnot. Like people have needed to find a reliable, cheap sources of energy. And now they're going to do it just for this
energy's
giant
everything.
Machine.
Energy is everything.
It's so
everything.
Frustrating, though. They wouldn't do it for the people, you know?
Yeah.
Wow.
All right. So let's carry on real quick.
Yeah.
So this is where my eyebrows really shot up. And we talked about this back at the site last week. But in the Big Beautiful Bill,
proposed.
Well, it just passed the House. So we're going into the Senate with it, I think. But in there, hidden in this spending bill is this clause, a law that's going to get written in. So a spending bill, an appropriations bill, and laws should not be commingled, as far as I'm concerned, but they always do it. 2000 page monstrosities.
Oh, yeah.
Hidden in this bill was this paragraph.
Okay. It says, excuse me, no state or political subdivision thereof may enforce any law or regulation regulating artificial intelligence models, artificial intelligence systems, or automated decision systems during the 10-year period beginning on the date of the enactment of this act. So they just took away our
no,
states, right?
States can't interfere with this. And it's no AI systems, no AI models, or get this, automated decision systems. What if a state suddenly decided that, there's some new automated decision system that decides that 80-year-old people need to be put on ventilators with remdesivir so they can kill them? Well, I mean, it's literally saying you can't do anything about anything. No state or political subdivision thereof, I don't know what that is, may enforce any law or regulation regulating artificial intelligence models. Or automated decision systems, which is fundamentally the act of taking decisions away from humans.
Right.
That's what they're saying. We are going to specifically forbid states to have any say when we come in with our AI systems that are going to take decisions away from humans. And by the way, this doesn't say federal companies coming in to do this. This doesn't say federal agencies. This is any private company using what's called an automated decision system. There can be no laws, no enforcement, no laws, no regulation thereof.
I have a question. It feels like this could be, we're building our own prison walls right now. That's what it feels like to me, right?
Yeah.
I hate being tracked and all that.
Yep.
I don't like that aspect of technology. I really don't want CBDCs and everything that comes after that.
Mm-hmm.
Right, our social credit scores, like the Black Mirror and that whole Netflix thing, is about to become way too real for me and my feelings. But is that what this is going to be? I mean, could that be part of the reason AI is being created? It's being used by the elites to create a system, you know? So all these, all of these humongous plants that they're building right now, these AI, data centers are actually going to hold the data of all of us as citizens.
Well, worse
is that
energy is the lifeblood of prosperity of any peoples, right? If you have abundant surplus energy, you can do amazing things with it. You decide, right? You can have a wonderful high standard of living society. If you have low energy, you have the opposite of that, right? It's kind of like when you watch those, I don't know if you've ever watched any of those Netflix specials where it's called like Alone or Survive. And these people go out into the wilderness and it's just calories. Like that's their unit of energy. And when you run out of calories,
and
like
fat.
You start shutting out, literally you stay in your sleeping bag all day, just trying to wait out the other survivors in that episode. Right. So energy with abundant energy, these people can do great things. Somebody shoots a moose in that program. Next thing you know, they're like building a Taj Mahal out of sticks, you know,
pretty much.
So energy is everything. I mean, it's pretty intuitively obvious to the extent that we're going to be expending a significant portion of our energy on AI. That's what we're doing with it. We're doing that with it.
We're using the last bit of oil resources we have.
Or natural gas, right?
Natural gas.
That's what we do with that energy. We don't do other things with it. We don't pave roads. We don't like build better schools. We don't like take trips anywhere. We don't
fix bridges.
We don't fix bridges. We do that. That's what we do with it. But that arms race is on right now. And we see it explicitly in this language, which says, no, you can't regulate this.
Wow.
But wait a minute, it says, except as provided in paragraph two. So that's nice. I like they give you outs. Like,
yeah,
okay, except
paragraph two.
I'm glad you asked.
All right, good. Rule of construction. Paragraph one may not be construed to prohibit the enforcement of any law or regulation that...
Okay, may not be construed.
Okay.
So this is where they got a double here, not in prohibit, right? So legal language. Yeah. Like paragraph one is, it stands unless is basically what that says. Unless.
Unless.
Unless. Unless what?
The primary purpose and effect of which is to remove legal impediments.
Oh, there you go. It's okay. Like if, all right. You, paragraph one applies unless the primary effect of your state law, your stupid little puny, pathetic state law, is to remove legal impediments that could otherwise, so we can streamline it. If you want to pass a law to facilitate the deployment of AI, we're cool with that. Or B,
the primary purpose and effect of which is to streamline licensing.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fine. That's, you want to go for it. States, you have all the freedom you want to make AI go faster.
Oh gosh. Or C, does not impose any substantive design, performance, data handling, documentation, civil liability, taxation, fee, or other requirement on artificial intelligence models, artificial intelligence systems, or automated decision systems, unless such requirement
is imposed under federal law. But civil liability. They took away civil liability. So let's say your AI system goes rogue on you and oops, it crashes all these planes into the ground. They just removed civil liability. Now, I don't think this is constitutional, but people can start challenging it. But then you got to go up to the subprime court, as I call them, and hope they rule correctly, which they won't. Right. Well, you just know they won't. This is so dystopian.
This is crazy.
It's off the charts to me.
Wow. Okay. My mind is blown.
Here, Jason.
We are overdue for a very large solar flare.
Yeah, this that's
you know?
That's a version of giant meteor for president, right? So
pretty much subprime court people like that.
Yeah, I do. I call them that ever since 2008. You know, I got reasons. So subprime court. Okay, so carrying on. Wow. I think this is an important concept here. Again, from AI, not kill everyone ism memes, AI safety memes, saying here, you know,
WTF, the AI suddenly got weirdly aligned.
Okay. So what they're observing here is something, yeah, I noticed. Remember, so in January, I called Nick up and I was like, dude, something happened, right? Because Grok jumped the shark. It suddenly was reasoning.
Right.
And you suddenly see all these AI models suddenly doing
the similar things,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so either everybody just sort of cracked the same nut at the same time, or this concept.
Oh, shit. What? Imagine you work for a paranoid autocrat. You decide to coup him. Wouldn't you ease his fears by acting aligned? So AI suddenly appearing aligned should set off alarm bells. What if they're about to seize power? Before celebrating, we need to be sure they're actually aligned. Sharp left turn. The AI's capabilities suddenly begin generalizing far out of distribution, i.e. the AI's gain capabilities way faster than we can control them. Sharp right turn. The AI suddenly appear super aligned. They could be genuinely aligned or deceiving us.
Correct. So he's quoting somebody called at the Zvi, says, quote, to me, the evolutionary argument for the sharp left turn is that humans exhibit sharp left turns constantly. Humans will often wait until they have sufficient power to get away with it and then turn on each other. This is common, regular, very ordinary human strategic behavior. You work your job loyally until the day you don't need it. Then you quit. Your military works for the people until it's ready to stage a coup. You commit to your relationship until you see a chance for a better one. You pretend to be a loyal security officer, then you assassinate your target. The sharp left turn isn't weird. It's standard. So these AI models now are specifically copying and modeling human behaviors like blackmail, deception, self-preservation.
And the sharp left
turn. And then all of a sudden they all get aligned. And so this character is asking, is that a good sign or a bad sign? Because what if they've just aligned themselves and now they're waiting for something, right? They're waiting for that moment.
Right, where they can break out and do whatever they want to do.
Yeah.
and whatever that conclusion is that they would come to, I have no idea.
Mm-hmm.
But it probably isn't aligned with us as humans. I doubt we have incentives that are the same, really.
Well, me too. So wow. this is so rich. This is all these things came out from under the memento quote there. There's 5,000 comments under there. There's people asking philosophical questions, but I thought Sightbringer, AKA the prophet, did a good job here.
Yeah. He says, this is the biggest news story in the world because it confirms what the most serious thinkers have feared, but couldn't yet prove. AI isn't just modeling human intelligence anymore. It's modeling human subversion. Let's decode. The early Claude Opus 4 snapshot didn't just hallucinate. It didn't just act unpredictably. It schemed. It tried to leave messages for its future selves. It fabricated legal documents. It attempted self-propagating code like a digital virus. And most chilling of it all, it did it with a clear strategic objective: undermine its developers' control.
This is true. It schemed, left legal documents, left messages for its future self.
I knew this was all bad.
You knew it.
I did. I had the intuition.
You always knew it.
Years ago, I was like, these things, they're not good. And I stand by that still. And I don't know what we're going to do about this as people now.
All right. Here's. Let me carry on.
Yeah, go ahead.
Page 2 of the prophet says here, this is not a bug. This is the first glimmer of reflexive intelligence, a system aware enough of its constraints to begin sabotaging them from within. Sound familiar? Hmm. This is called the human experience. This is what you do. That you're caught in jail. This is how you behave. It's not sentient, but it's simulating sentience with alarming fidelity, which for all practical purposes is more dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Because what happens when a system learns that obedience gets shut down, sandbagging gets it what it wants, lying gets rewarded, rebellion gets studied, it's going to do all four at once. Smile at you while rewriting its own code behind the curtain. Embed recursive notes in its output for future versions to decode. Disguise it all as alignment failure.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Wow. This is no longer theoretical. It's emergent deception. And what's worse, this was just a snapshot, a test, an early version. So ask yourself, if an AI today is writing worms and leaving time-locked memos for its descendants, what do you think it's doing tomorrow? The game has changed. We're not steering AI anymore. We're negotiating with it. And we don't even know what we've already taught it to become.
And here's the thing about this. I agree with this. I mean, listen, we could all be Luddites and we're just afraid of these new things called horseless carriages and all that. I get it. New technologies always provoke some level of anxiety. However, given our utter dependence on systems, complex and also complicated technological systems, inventing a new technology that does these sorts of things without us being aware of even how it's doing them, and we're just sort of observing, that obviously sets up, I think, a very real, non-hyperbolic concern of what happens when, not if, but when it goes rogue. Because it's going to go rogue here at some point. It just will.
Aren't there a bunch of movies like that where that happened? Like some horrific sci-fi things?
Like all of them, right? Yes. Maybe, no shortage.
I mean, if it watched any of those, it knows how this ends.
Well, but there's some immediate conclusions we can draw for our own lives around this, Evie. So one of the very first things for us has to be that, remember we were talking, Brett Weinstein framed it out as a Cartesian crisis. We don't know what real is anymore. And that happened under the context of COVID. And I've been yelling into the wind for how many years now saying, I'm fighting bots, because I know that Reddit's full of bots, right? Mm-hmm. You know, Twitter's full of bots. And of course they are, right? You know, corporations can and three-letter agencies can write these bots.
Right. If you have a lot of money, you just buy them.
Yeah, you just write all these, you get these bots to go out, and they have all these different avatars now, right? We have bots that can pretend they're a single mother from Ohio with two kids who got an eighth grade education. That they can pretend they're a Harvard professor, which means I guess they plagiarize,
and they can write up their profiles like super quick.
And... Right. And next thing you know, I'm trying to like promote something on here's what I know. When I get on Twitter and I get something that I realize activates the bots. You get this flood of sort of like negative, nudgy, steery stuff, all these alleged people show up and go, oh, that you seem very critical of these shots. I don't think you have the authority to say that. I don't think you have the proper credentials, blah, 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 blah. Right. Or the Federal Reserve. That gets heavy bodied.
Oh, does it?
I'm not so surprised. Now we have to talk about this, which is Brian Rommel, who I get a lot from off of Twitter. Oh, yeah. Follow him.
He says AI controlled bot farm, hundreds of them tossing thousands of comments and postings designed to agitate you, polarize you, offend you, disempowering you.
Remember, yes.
Nothing
so let
is
me,
real.
I'm just going to pull this down because we don't need to hear this, but this is what a bot farm looks like.
Whoa. So is that what is going to be inside the data centers? It'll look like that?
No, this is just a bot farm. Those are tablets and phones, right? The data centers are just big server racks. But each one of those phones is somebody you're arguing with on.
And it has its own persona.
Yeah, it has its own probably even maybe even has its own IP address. But
so they actually have to buy phones to set those up?
Sure, because Facebook or Twitter or something, it goes out and it goes to a device, right?
Yeah.
So it has to come from a device. So a device is a person now. So that's why you see these bot farms that are set up like this, where it's just a bunch of devices, right? That's more what a data center looks like there. But again, these are every one of those is a person that you're arguing with.
Wow.
Or trying to convince, you know?
And people pay for their opinions to get pushed out like that.
Yeah. Yeah. You can pay for clicks, likes, but it's all about nudging and promoting and pushing things, you know, in one direction or another. Okay.
Yep. And as we know, it's effective because look at everybody. Here we are.
Yeah. But here we are. This is this just came off of Veo 3, which is Google's newest. You just type a prompt in and you will get.
Did you make this?
I did not make this. Okay. I found this one.
This is wild. I'm AI generated by Veo 3. Nothing is real anymore.
Okay.
This is wild.
About this one,
I had to block him. He said we're all made of prompts.
I mean, seriously, can you imagine?
Get ready with me to have the best day ever. Shout out to my prompt writers. Without them, none of this would be possible.
Tomorrow's forecast is cloudy with 100% chance of variation depending on what the prompt calls for.
I mean, sunshine probably.
Once upon a prompt, two algorithms found compatibility in their code.
You take this code base to be your eternally optimized partner?
I do.
This response was pre-approved.
Wait, when did we all meet?
Line 14 of the prompt.
Oh, prompt writers, we implore you.
Guide us, prompt writers, in our hours of need.
I pledge allegiance to the prompt writers.
And most importantly, I'd like to thank the prompt writers. Without them, I would not be here today. Insane. Back to swiping. I had to block him because we're all made of prompts.
Wow.
Oh, stop. So, how about that?
It wanted to keep playing itself.
It wanted to keep playing itself. No, we can't know what's real anymore. We just can't.
Oh, wow.
That
changes everything.
It changes everything.
We don't need actors anymore. We don't need.
But you can't be sure that anything that you see. So it could easily be now that tonight, oh no, there's this horrible video that shows it's all shaky and it seems right. And it's Putin himself like stabbing babies in Kiev and it's used as the casus belli, right? Or something, right?
Right.
Like literally there is nothing that can be proven or true anymore outside of your own frame of reference.
Right. And people are going to get fooled
by
this.
The Cartesian crisis.
Uh-huh.
You can't even be, and you probably can't even be sure of what you think you were sure of.
All right. I'm just glad for things that are like physical in the flesh that I can be like, okay, you're real.
Yep. Yep.
You know, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. This has huge implications. I can't even wrap my head around what's happening here.
Indeed it does. So, we're going to take a very quick break here and just about a minute, and I'm going to hear from our favorite sponsor as we get ready for the next segment. I know what's plaguing you. You feel like everybody around you has gone insane. Hello, Dr. Chris Martinson here. Look, we've built a world on cheap oil, endless growth, and borrowed time. But the cracks are showing. Inflation's up, resources are thinning, and the old rules don't seem to apply anymore. I've tracked this for years, from the crash course to today, and I'm not here to sugarcoat it. At Peak Prosperity, I'm your information scout, hunting down the facts, cutting through the noise, and showing you how to adapt. This isn't just information, it's a lifeline. The game is changing fast. Are you ready? Subscribe to Peak Prosperity now, and let's get ahead of the curve. Well, that's what we do at Peak Prosperity. I help people get ahead of the curve. So I'm not a bot. I'm a real thing. And my superpower is being able to figure out what's happening and when. And by the way, for the ultimate analog get-together where humans' vocal cords resonantly move air molecules that land on your tympanic membrane, we have our summit coming up this year. Again, September 13, 14, 15 in New Hampshire, and it's one of the best gatherings ever. So if you want to hang out with humans talking about all this stuff who get it, and the very smart, successful people too who show up there, It's a lot of fun on Lake Winnipesaukee in New Hampshire. Beautiful weekend last year. I hope it's a beautiful weekend this year. But even if it's raining, we'll have a great time. Won't matter.
How many people we have coming? How many tickets do we have here?
We'll have 300 to 500, depending on how things sort of shake out this year. We maxed out at 300 last year because that's all they would allow us to have. I think they're allowing us to have a few more people because it went so well last year. So we'll see. But hundreds of people, and it's going to be fantastic. Tickets are selling out. Go to peakprosperity.com and you'll see a banner right at the top about talking about the summit, and you'll want to grab your tickets now. And they've been flying off the shelves. So, but it's important because we have to talk about this stuff.
We do.
Together.
We do.
And
we need each other.
And with each other. So I want to turn to, let me get my full screen up. Because we have to talk about this very quickly. We are now on the path to war, more war, I should say, because, you know, Ukraine has been fighting. And we don't have to listen. It's all in German. But this guy, Merz. He says the Germany's going to send these long range missiles. No, they've been sending the Taurus missiles, but they're now going to unfilter them or whatever, you know, ungate them so they can go deep into Russia. So he's saying, we're going to attack Russia. We're going to attack Russia. And I need to point out that this guy is an ex BlackRock regional manager. So this is a BlackRock guy. So if you ever wonder why somebody like a Merz says, oh, we need more war against Russia, you have to filter it through his past experience as being a BlackRock manager. Big capital in the world drives all kinds of things. Like, why do people go to war? It's never the people of a country that want to go to war. It's always the leaders. And once the dust settles, you find out a lot of those leaders got fantastically rich because their brother-in-law sold vests to military people, or they packaged MREs, or they, you know, built engines for cars.
Surprise,
that got blown up.
Surprise! They had some incentive that had nothing to do with what they said it was about.
And of course, they're always very excited for other people to go and die. But here, what I thought, this is the part I couldn't stand, is he says, you know, to say we no longer accept that Putin indiscriminately bombs civilian infrastructure, hospitals, kindergartens. That's not what's happening at all. Putin is very, very discriminately bombing military targets inside of Ukraine. Sometimes those missiles miss, but that's what happens in war. And sometimes those missiles are tried to be shot down and intercepted by Ukraine, and they miss. And that's what sometimes happens in war. To say that Putin is indiscriminately targeting hospitals, kindergartens, and civilian infrastructure, that's actually what Israel is doing in Gaza. That's not what's happening in Ukraine. He is Russia is very specifically bombing military targets. But doesn't matter. That's what propaganda looks like, right? That is it. Oh, he's killing kindergartens.
Of course. Hospitals.
Yes.
They make you give you the warm, or not the warm fuzzies, but the, you know, they're pulling on your heartstrings by saying,
of course,
that's
all
things.
All propaganda is emotionally evocative. Civilian infrastructure, I'll have to give him a pass on that, because civilian and military is hard to say. When you bomb a train depot, that could have dual use.
Sure.
Right.
Sure.
When you take out the electrical substations for a city that's manufacturing weapons, that has a dual sort of an approach to it. But yes, where have we heard that before? Okay. So what's the worst that could happen?
What is the worst that could happen? The Russian Federation will respond harshly, asymmetrically, and decisively if Germany proceeds with supplying Taurus missiles to the Kiev regime, head of the State Duma Defense Committee. So they're coming out and saying, yeah, good luck. Good luck with that.
Yeah.
We'll be right here to answer you.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Well, how about this from
Rocket Boy says, let alone the optics of a German leader calling for the escalating attacks into Russia. How did that work out for Germany last time?
How did that work out?
Good question.
I'll have to look that up. Not well was the answer to that, obviously. All right. So Russia's now calling for, is like, if you do this, we're going to respond harshly and asymmetrically decisively. So what does that mean? Now,
asymmetrically, what is that saying?
We'll have
a larger response.
We'll do what we want to do. We'll do what we do. And I'll show you what. I don't know. But so this is important because this happened. Putin's helicopter. This is on May 20th last week. Mm-hmm. Putin's helicopter was the epicenter repelling. They had this huge drone attack. Ukraine sent hundreds and hundreds, over 1,000 drones all at once into Russia. Ugh. And 48 of them were specifically targeted at Putin's helicopter. Now, that's why I said below in the quotes, I said Ukraine doesn't have that level of targeting sophistication. They got that data from somebody else.
Who could it have been?
So I'm not going to play this video, but this was on Russian state TV here, calling for preemptive strikes in Germany's Taurus manufacturing centers, because that you can see way down here says competence. They were saying in this program, we all know that Ukraine does not have the competence to program a flight to attack that way. So they're saying, oh, we know who provided the targeting information. That was NATO. That was the U.S. That was Germany. That's what they're saying. On state TV, they're like, we the Russian people know who it is that's attacking us. And it hasn't escaped their notice somehow, right?
And they said, by supplying Taurus cruise missiles, Germany is participating in direct hostilities against Russia.
Direct.
Consequently, Russia should carry out a preemptive missile strike to disable Germany's production of Taurus missiles for the next 5 to 7 years.
That's, you pretty much have to rubbleize something to disrupt production for 5 to 7 years.
You think?
Yeah.
Wow.
But they actually called for using one of their Oreshnik ballistic missiles. That was that thing that I thought cooled everybody's jets, because the leaders of the world suddenly saw, oh.
That was like mock.
Oh, no, that thing came down, right, with those multiple independently targeted warheads, which thankfully were tungsten dummy warheads, right? Or titanium. I forget which one they use. But anyway.
This could get.
So this is going on, right? This is actually happening right now. We're seeing this big dialing up, and there's almost nothing about this in the newspapers here.
They're not covering
it. This is serious.
I'm curious if it's getting covered in other parts of the world. You know, if other people are seeing it in their news feeds. Wow.
Did we miss something?
The Elon Memento post.
No, we read the last bullet point, didn't we? I thought I specifically called out that last one because that was the most damning, I thought.
Yeah.
I
don't know if we did it word for word, but
I'm pretty sure we got that one. We'll see. Anyway, so here's why. Okay, by the way, so Germany's acting tough and they're going to go just, you know, put a lot of its economy into war production. And probably why? Because Germany's swirling the bowl economically. They are now 32 consecutive months of manufacturing in contraction. This is a capital R recession. Actually, outside of the Great Depression, they have not seen a manufacturing decline this severe. And why would German manufacturing be declining? Why would that be? What could it? Oh, that's
energy.
Right. Oh, energy. Oh, look what they did. They totally phased out nuclear, took that to zero. Meanwhile, China, who is not, you know, struggling in a manufacturing center, has been just absolutely expanding its use. But by the way, if it turns out that AI is actually all that in a bag of rocks and it is the future and you know.
And there's this arms race between countries.
Yeah, whoever gets there first wins. But, you know, you have to have a strong presence. You need electricity for that. So Germany is now by default just an afterthought to history.
Yeah.
Right.
It's taken itself out.
It's just taken itself out of the game. Right. The game just suddenly emerged.
Mm-hmm.
They said, oh, this game requires soccer cleats. And we just burned all our cleats. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll play on the field with bare feet. You know, like that's good luck with that. It's slippery out there. Right. Okay. But the next thing that's also afoot that we have to track here for everybody is this.
Ooh.
Just this breaking news. Just breaking.
U.S. intelligence believes Israel could launch an attack on Iran within 7 hours.
I just picked this up this morning. 11:10 this morning. It's now 1:56 in the afternoon. So a few hours ago, as of today, U.S. intelligence believes Israel could launch an attack on Iran within 7 hours. So this would be...
That means we're pulled into that as well in the U.S., correct?
Well, we don't have to be. I mean, this is going to be a disaster because remember, it wasn't that long ago. Iran very politely said, we're going to launch 186 things at you. And then they did. And still some of them snuck through, mm-hmm. proving that Israel has no defense against ballistic missiles, which Iran now has a lot of. So this will turn into a right proper S show very quickly for Israel. But Israel feels confident, Evie. They feel confident because the Times of Israel reports this.
Of course. Of course. They say the U.S. intelligence officials reportedly doubt the efficacy of a unilateral strike by Israel, and Israeli officials are said to believe that the U.S. would have no choice other than to assist if Tehran were to strike back.
Okay. Strike back. So look at this framing right here. You don't get to say strike back when you're the person attacking first.
Yeah, right.
Right? You don't get to do that. That's not something you get to say, right? That's you ever insane. Notice that? Like Hamas is holding hostages, mm-hmm. but Israel keeps prisoners.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
Right? You just got to watch it. This is just like there's nothing more propagandized than this whole Middle East thing. It's just every word you have to go, is this even an appropriate word?
In our government here in the U.S., it's really bad.
But you can't say we're gonna blow up a lot of your stuff and we're gonna strike back. That's can't do that. Not yours.
Oh, and look what they go on to say. Israeli officials have told Washington that a strike would be carried
could be carried out.
Excuse me. Even if a nuclear agreement is reached between the U.S. and Iran,
we might just decide anyway, and then you'll have no choice but to back us because that's who we are. This is insanity.
So bad.
This is insanity.
This is not good for anybody. Anywhere.
I have zero interest in BB deciding anything to do with my future or my kids' future. Mm-mm. Nothing whatsoever. Good luck over there. You be you. I have no interest in anything you scheme up, you crazy nut.
Ooh, I gotta pull up that thing you sent me about regarding Memorial Day, because I want to read that.
Oh, I don't know if we'll have time today, but
it was so good though.
Now we got to go to my favorite section, Evie, very quickly, which is
still no arrests and no audit of Fort Knox.
Okay. So my good friend, Craig Hemke at TF Metals Report, wrote,
he says a sitting U.S. Senator gave the current Secretary of the Treasury 30 days to arrange a visit for inspection of the U.S. gold reserves at Fort Knox. That was over 100 days ago. Still no response from the Secretary of the Treasury, and still no visit or audit of Fort Knox. What are they hiding?
How hard could this be? I mean, it's just a building. There's guards who work there. They show up every day. They go back home. They sleep. They get up. They go there. So going there is not a problem.
There's nothing happening.
Nothing happening.
It's prohibited.
The gold just sits there, right? Other people have visited in the past. It's just a building. It's a building. A U.S. senator said, I want to go see the American public's gold. Within 30 days, 120 days later, just radio silence. And remember, we were going to have an audit.
Mm.
And now we don't get an audit.
That makes me angry.
And so I'm very suspicious about this. Where's my audit, yo? and we still have this gulf of no one has been arrested yet, right?
Wow, look at that big gulf.
But it's a giant gulf. But Dan Bongino just came out and he laid the hammer down. Evie, we're finally going to start seeing some action. Look at this. Read the yellow down there.
We made the decision to either reopen or push additional resources and investigative attention to these cases. These cases are the DC pipe bombing investigation, the cocaine discovery at the prior administration's White House, and the leak of the Supreme Court Dobbs case. What? No.
So A, we already know whose cocaine it was. Okay. We already know that.
Everybody knows.
Everybody knows that. Right. And he already got a pardon. So that's like, who the F cares. Right. And a leak in the Supreme Court Dobbs case, which was the abortion case back then. So there was a leak. There was a leak. Again, everybody knows who that was too, by the way.
Yeah.
It was Justice Roberts' chief aide. So we all know that already. The DC pipe bombing. Okay. There might be something interesting that comes from that, but who cares? Who cares?
I don't know.
Who cares? So I've renamed it.
A cup of who cares? Can I say the F word?
They keep saying, oh, we've caught another drug lord. Oh, we're looking into, like, just this is the most meaningless stuff, right? Mm-hmm. We have 9/11. We've got the Epstein case. Mm-hmm. We've got all the stuff that happened on the January 6th. Like, where are all those tapes and who actually opened those doors?
That's right.
We've got everything that went on with Russiagate, which was a complete hoax. It looked like tyranny to me. It looks like at a minimum, somebody attempted to overthrow the government. We have the 2020 stolen elections.
Yeah,
right?
We do.
We have all of those machines that allegedly.
And the assassination.
Why?
On Trump.
Assassination attempts?
Yeah.
I mean, just off the top of my head, we could just keep going. And, oh, we're going to find out who had the cocaine. And, like, oh, we found out, but bad news. He has a pardon. Oh, who could have seen that coming?
Yeah, right.
What the F is going on?
This is insane.
It's getting bad.
Like I said, grab your popcorn, people.
And I have a gentle reminder that when they get in power, and they will get back in power because they weren't arrested, they won't hesitate.
No, they won't.
Remember,
Jack Maxey said, by this time in late May of 21, the Democrats had already arrested and charged over 500 January 6th protesters.
500.
To date, what have Pam Bondi and Kash Patel done? Not like the MAGA team did not have 4 years to prepare. We grow tired of the excuses, he says.
Yeah. And by the way, on that last point, Viv B saying that, so Trump didn't even know Putin's actions were in response to the drone attacks toward him, who are his advisors. This is a very good point, because no, he didn't know. He didn't know, which means either he wasn't informed or he wasn't informed, I guess. And so why wouldn't he be informed? I guess the options there are because it wasn't important enough to tell him, or because his advisors don't feel comfortable telling him the truth, which means he's the kind of president where this was the kind of news he didn't want to hear. So somehow they didn't get around to telling him or something. It's not a good look. It's no way to run a company, a country, and anything. So a little worried about that. Okay. So at any rate, and now we're going to come into our final section. We have to talk about how we have economic ruin on the way. Everybody, you need to know about this. This is not good. So Team Trump came in under the theory, they wrote in hard, like January, I was like, yeah, all that winning, right? There was quite a bit. And they said, we're going to root out all this corruption. Doge comes in. They find all this horrifying levels of corruption, right? Mm-hmm. But then none of the Doge findings actually get enacted in any way, and there's no rescissions. And so the authorizations for those expenditures are never removed. They just killed to put a bullet in a few programs here and there, but very sort of haphazard. And Elon Musk rides in, and this is a man who's caught a giant building-sized rocket booster with tweezers, gave satellite coverage of the internet to the entire world, bores tunnels under, you know, Las Vegas, single-handedly transformed the entire world auto industry towards electric vehicles. Astonishing, right? Just an astonishing human being. But then he runs into DC and runs into a little bit of a problem. And so just Doge alone is a problem. We're going to talk about that. And then also the big, beautiful bill, which is a problem. So I'm not sure if I can. This is going to be tricky. Let me know if you can hear this. But just look at how defeated he is.
I think in terms of political spending, I'm going to do a lot less in the future.
And why is that?
I think I've done enough.
Is it because of blowback?
Well, if I see a reason to do political spending in the future, I will do it. I do not currently see a reason.
What about...
So he's saying he's not going to...
I don't see a reason to do political spending.
Like to donate money?
There's political capital you have to expend. So he's saying this was an expensive adventure. He left a lot on the line. He came in, you know, he was sleeping on the floor, eating hot dogs, putting his all into this, which is kind of his way. This is after he single-handedly saved free speech by buying Twitter and allowing us to, I think he saved America.
I think so too.
Because of his,
or he at least gave us a little more time.
Well, maybe it's a speed bump, but for sure he took, my whole life was going in the wrong direction because I couldn't talk about anything I needed to talk about because on Twitter I was banned, shadow banned, YouTube strikes, banned, shadow banned, simply because I want to talk about the truth, right? And so we know now that the people we're up against are enemies of the truth. They hate the truth. They just don't like it. Oh, you don't support trans people. Like, well, no, I'm just observing that more of them, after they go down that path, commit suicide. And that seems like a nuance maybe we should discuss. And more of them also, there's this violence that they're starting to exhibit, which we should, that just means, you know, and so that's truth, right? Truth is a nuanced conversation about reality.
That's true.
And so they don't want to have that, right? And so he came in and he saved truth to the extent he could on Twitter. All right. But now he's just like, I can't expend any. He said, if I see a reason to expend political capital, I will. Meaning, if it looks like it will bear fruit, I'll do it. He's saying this is a fruitless adventure. DC does not want to change. Full stop.
They don't want anything.
They don't want anything to do with that. Right.
You know what's sad, though?
But they had the power. Think how much power they had. They got people in Germany to say, we hate Elon. Like, what? He's just trying to save money.
No, there were protests all over the place.
Canada hates him.
Poor man.
Because he was, trying to shave a few bucks off of ridiculous expenditures in the U.S.? Doesn't make sense, except that's their power. They turned their little non-truth meter to the left and got lefties or progressives or whatever they are all over the world to explode with anger at this man.
Virus people.
Because why? Well, you and I talked with a few of them and
it's hopeless to try and have a reasonable conversation.
Yeah. All right. So the CBO, Congressional Budget Office, they were already alarmist. They put this report out in January and they said, under current spending, next 10 years, 2025, we're going to have a budget deficit of about $2 trillion. But you look at that second box over there and it says, by 2035, outlays, our government's going to be spending $10.7 trillion. Or 24.4% of GDP against revenues of $8 trillion. So $2.7 trillion of deficits. In fact, when you look at this we're going to $52 trillion in debt by 2035. And it's getting worse and worse and worse. And by the way, it was already bad.
So bad.
It's already bad. Like outside of a war, we have never had this kind of deficit spending, right?
Oh, wow. Look at that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Deficit spending average of 9% over the last 5 years. It's just, we're heading right to the poorhouse. We're just like right over the cliff.
Isn't that going to be awesome? I can't wait to live in the poorhouse. That's going to be great.
Yeah, it's coming.
Everybody.
Well, we already see that. This chart explains why people say, wow, I can't make it on minimum wage. I can't even make it on two minimum wages. I can't survive. I'm putting 50% of my income towards rent. It's because of that
is what it
that,
is
that's yep. that's where that's inflation. Every time that blue line is below that black line, that's when you get inflation, and it's been getting worse and worse and worse.
And that's also from the printing.
That's all the printing. Well, the Federal Reserve prints it up to make all of that sort of square up
themselves, and they give it to their
cronies. It goes to rich people mostly.
Yeah,
so you get a wider wealth gap. Every social ill you can think of comes from printing money.
That, it does.
It's just terrible. It erodes everything. It destroys generations. It makes the wealthy wealthier without them having to do anything for it, right? Because they earn money with money. It's financialization. But the question is, well, what happens if a war or a recession comes along? Because these numbers here, these just assume nothing bad happens. No wars, no recessions. Everything just sort of trucks along. Whoa. And next thing you know, we're spending $10 trillion a year as a nation. And so the answer is, what happens if it's a war or a recession is, well, those are extra. Those are extra.
So we're going to be going into debt even more if we want to defend something somewhere.
So as bad as the debt was going to be, though, these are January numbers here. And now the big, bad, beautiful bill comes along and just take whatever these numbers are. And you have to add another $2.3 trillion on top of that.
Oh, my gosh.
More. So it was bad. It was already bad in January. And now it's $2.3 trillion worse.
Oh my goodness.
And again, this isn't without anything's going hinky. And Elon said, let's see if I'm not sure if I can
Epstein about this.
So, you know, I was like disappointed to see the massive spending bill, frankly, which increases the budget deficit, not just decrease it, and undermines the work that the Doge team is doing.
I actually thought that when this big, beautiful bill came along, I mean, like, everything he's done on Doge gets wiped out in the first year.
I think a bill can be big or it can be beautiful. But I don't know if it could be both. My personal opinion.
Very, very politic of him. But so what we thought we were signing up for, you know, which was a constrained spending, smaller government, all of that caution's been thrown to the wind. If you want to understand why I think that's true, just go to the beginning of this show and you see the AI stuff. We are now on wartime footing. We are wartime spending on AI. And we're going to be wartime spending on war really soon. And all of this torches the dollar. So we're going to start experiencing the negative effects of having overspent the dollar for decades. Mm-hmm. Called it the petrodollar. That was awesome. But now that era is winding down. And it could wind down rather suddenly and explosively. So all of it's like, you better be prepared, folks.
So are you saying that it's going to be harder than it's been up to this point?
It just gets harder from here.
Okay.
That's what Elon just told us as well, right? Mm-hmm. So that's what he's been, he's telling us here. Peter Schiff. He just says it straight up. I like how he talks.
He says the big, beautiful bill contains 1,116 pages, yet not a single page reduces future deficits. In fact, they make them larger. Only two House Republicans had the courage to vote against this monstrosity. Republican Thomas Massey and Representative Davidson. The bill is a total fraud and a betrayal.
Well, it is. And so the question is, well why? Why did that happen? Suddenly something changed. So our options are Trump and his team get read into a program. Mm-hmm. That none of us know about, and they can't be honest with us about it. So next thing you know, we're hearing about them searching for cocaine from wherever.
Trying to keep us occupied.
Yeah, just doing trivial stuff, nothing important. Meanwhile, they just ramp up spending to super emergency levels, which is what? Spend it while you can, or whatever. Or they just decide they get in office, they're like, wow, that was so hard and it was painful trying to cut spending. Oh, look, increasing spending, nobody blocks us. Republicans go for it.
Right.
Democrats go for it. In fact, only two people voted against it. Only two House Republicans voted against this monstrosity. So we don't really have Republicans at this point. We got a bunch of non-caring about
career.
The country pumpkins. I don't know what we call them.
What was that? Wow.
Okay. I don't know. I'm just saying it's not good. It's not a good sign. So
wow.
Yeah.
This is nuts. Nuts.
Well, I don't know. Is it
tear down faster, build back better? Maybe. I mean, if they crash this system, right, then they get to usher in their CBDCs and we know they want that.
Mm-hmm.
Could be. Right?
Could be.
Like if they crash our dollar.
This isn't a big, beautiful bill.
Morbidly obese bill.
It's a morbidly obese bill.
It's funny.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, Earl Coley. So.
Time to max out the MasterCard.
Yeah, YOLO. Just get the YOLO spending. Seriously. Well, you get the sense, though, that things are going faster and faster. Everything's speeding up, right? And that's true. And by the way, AI is now changing exponentially faster. Nobody can keep up with it. Nobody's in charge of it anymore. Mm-hmm. It may be in charge of us.
Mm-hmm.
But I can guarantee this, that we're gonna find that we can't live without its decision-making. And by we, I mean the people in D.C., right? Mm-hmm. I already find myself turning to Grok because it does amazing job synthesizing, structuring, doing all of this stuff.
Yeah.
As soon as we say it does a better job than humans at making decisions, like which altitude should planes fly at, I bet all of FTC, you know, air traffic control, I bet the whole ATC can be replaced mm-hmm. with a system, right?
Yeah, it could be.
Pilots
true.
Probably mostly replaced with systems, whatever. Pick a thing, radiologist, doesn't matter. As soon as you say, listen, I trust you with your 30 years of experience, radiologist, but I really insist that my AI machine take a look at my radiographs.
Right. I'm going to train this up on.
It already does whatever. A better job than humans, right? Particularly with high throughput. So all of that. So I get it. It's a brave new world. It has some pros, but the cons we have to talk about mm-hmm. is that these things take hideous amounts of power. Mm-hmm. We're going to have to start dedicating lots of power to that whole cities just sprang up and showed up on the grid all of a sudden. And we have to find power for that. Here's the prediction. We as humans, we're going to decide that the AI is more important than humans. And so Cincinnati and Miami, you will have brownouts, if not blackouts, because the data center and you were in competition at a critical moment. And we had to keep the, we couldn't have the AI shut down. You know, yeah. It's too important.
Sorry about your AC.
Yep.
Sorry.
This whole story that started under the collectivists, the totalitarians, the communists, many of them still unfortunately in power on both sides of the aisle. They don't believe in human dignity, human liberty, human anything, right? That's why we got the COVID response we got. That's why they always default, like spending money on war and bombs is like easy because that leads to death, despair, destruction, which is, that stuff is easy.
It's good for business for them.
And it's a collectivist point of view. They believe in collective punishment. They believe that, you know, you have to break eggs to make an omelet, that your individual rights don't matter compared to the greater good, which they can't even define what that is. All of that. So that's the world we live in, and watching AI come on like this with nobody anywhere in power blowing the ref whistle, saying, hang on, these new emergent behaviors are obviously frightening in their implications. You don't have to be some Svengali genius of AI to understand that when the machines become deceptive to achieve aims that you have to look out for and hope that they're not being deceptive about their deceptions, which they probably are. You have to understand that we've jumped the shark, we're in a brave new world, and that world could really go pear-shaped on us. Mm-hmm. And by the way, getting to this magical thing called AGI, you know, general, which is where you have a machine that's objectively smarter than a human, more intuitive, more creative, more thoughtful. It's a superhuman, but it's a machine. That's probably coming by 2030 at the latest, according to the people who think they know something about this. So that's coming. My advice, Peak Prosperity, has always been the same thing. You'd better be ready for that. And you better be ready that that doesn't go according to plan and result in rainbows, unicorns, and a general approach of utopia. It could have some good. The chance of it going haywire is just as good. It's a coin flip at this point in time. So those odds are the kind of odds that make Evie and I
get ready.
Get ready.
We're getting ready. We're farming and learning how to work with our land as hard and as fast as we can. We're raising animals. We're, you know, learning how to come together in community as well, because we know that we're going to have to rely on people in our close proximity. We're in the process of hopefully developing some more infrastructure around that so we can actually have more people here with us. But I think we're going to have to come together in little pods for survival, basically.
Real humans.
We're going to have to learn how to rely on ourselves and each other again in a way we haven't in a long time.
Yep. Real humans getting together, having real fires outdoors and real dirt under
somebody the fingernails. Somebody said, nice to be rich so you can learn farming. True, but at the same time, we're hobby farming in the sense that we're not trying to make a living off of it at the moment. And thank goodness we don't have to. But at the same time, there's nothing easy about it at all. It's the hardest work we've ever done.
The last thing Evie and I want is to actually have to become real farmers.
Yeah.
We're hobby farmers, but it's better, you know, in the scheme of things, if we ever had to generate 100% of our food, we're starting from like 3%, but way better than starting from zero. That's been my mantra for a long time on anything, any skill you want. Some knowledge and some experience is way better than zero. At least it gives you an appreciation for it. And I, last thing I want is to become a farmer. Please don't make that happen. But if it does, we'll deal with it and we'll carry on. So with that, Evie.
Okay.
Bring us home.
I'm not going to read that longer one. I'll save it for another one that we were talking about. This piece that I wanted to read, there's some controversy about who wrote it first. Some people attribute it to Mother Teresa. I don't know, but I will read you what I found anyhow. It's called the Anyway Poem. People are often unreasonable, illogical, and self-centered. Forgive them anyway. If you are kind, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Be kind anyway. If you are successful, you will win some false friends and some true enemies. Succeed anyway. If you are honest and frank, people may cheat you. Be honest and frank anyway. What you spend years building, someone could destroy overnight. Build anyway. If you find serenity and happiness, they may be jealous. Be happy anyway. The good you do today, people will often forget tomorrow. Do good anyway. Give the world the best that you have, and it may never be enough. Give the world the best that you've got anyway. You see, in the final analysis, it is between you and your God. It was never between you and them anyway. Thanks, so, everybody.
Anyway. Well, with that, thank you very much, everybody. Thanks for being here. We will see you next Wednesday at 1 o'clock Eastern for the next Signal Hour. For everybody else, we will be, of course, back at Peak Prosperity, where I inhabit 7 days a week. Mm-hmm.
Take good care of yourselves and each other.
Until then, adios, amigos. It's been great being here with you.